Greetings and welcome to Grund Podcast, the thing that you listen if you like adventure games, art, literature, music, game development, and everything in between. Our today's guest is Alex Canaris Satirio, probably the right spelling, one of the Polygon Treehouse co-founders and creators of Rocky, an amazing adventure game you have to play. After my spectacular fail right at the beginning, I hope you will appreciate that I left that in. We talk about how Rocky and Studio came to be, get some amazing advice for small indies, and chat about a couple other games worth playing. And don't forget, Grund is a surreal sci-fi narrative-driven adventure game where your choices matter. Follow us on Twitter, join our Discord, everything else, all links you can find in the show notes and on grund.com. Also, we have a Kickstarter preview page. Click that notify me button there as well. Off with the show. Okay, then I already know how I start this. Aha! Oh, okay. There goes my Alan Partridge impression. I thought that since you're from UK, you're a fan of Alan's.
Yeah, everyone likes Alan. Actually, where we used to live in, Cambridge, and my wife is from Norwich, which is kind of where character Alan Partridge is from. So
yes,
yeah, everyone likes Alan.
Okay, I have some congratulations for you, but that's for later. Let's start with a Polygon Treehouse. You have a small team, 8 people. But everyone have loads of experience. We couldn't call you a young and inexperienced team in that regard. You founded the Polygon with Tom Jones. I presume you two, since you were working together, nurtured this idea for some time. How this idea of going indie came to be? Got sick of AAA, or what were the reasons?
We weren't fostering this idea of going indie. I think I was looking at some indie stuff in our spare time. But basically, me and Tom met at university. So we were both studying computer animation, and then after university, we both got jobs at Sony in Cambridge, so at PlayStation, working on games like Medieval Resurrection and some of the Killzone games. And initially, it was PlayStation 2, so we were both working on a game called Ghost Hunter. But then basically, after we were there for about 14 years, so a long time, worked on lots of different titles. But then the studio got shut down. And so the studio closed, and so we had to work out what we wanted to do next. And we were both art directors at the studio at that point. And we just kind of, been in AAA for a while, and we both fancied trying to do something that was more personal, and with a smaller team. So and the idea of going into another big studio at that point, having done such a long stint, wasn't that appealing. So we talked about it, and then we just decided to go for it, and didn't look back.
Mm-hmm. I have the small question here. Does Tom Jones hear a lot of Tom Jones the Singer jokes?
He hears them a lot. And he's a bit, actually, in credit to Tom, so his Twitter handle is It's Not Unusual. So I think he's leaned into them and embraced the fact that he's going to get lots of Tom Jones jokes. Yeah.
That's a healthy attitude for sure.
Yes.
This spring I had some, let's call it a meeting with one of UK's publisher, and we got to chat about Alan Partridge as well, and I got to know that they have two Dans, and you all know that Dan stuff.
Yeah.
And after a couple of weeks, I got a rejection letter, and I really really wanted to send them one question. Did I laugh to dance too much?
Oh,
that's my little sob story. But talking about the story, The story about Rocky, or maybe correctly would be say story of Tove, how it came to be time-wise, did you know that you want to go indie? Okay, well, you decided you want to go indie. Did the story came as well at that time, or you started to figure it out later?
So I think to start off with, we knew the genre of game that we wanted to make. We knew we wanted to make a narrative game and something that was non-violent. I think we'd been making games about shooting people for quite some time. And so as we were getting a bit older, we fancied making something that was non-violent, and we knew we wanted to do a modern take on the classic adventure games that we loved growing up. So we knew that, but at the start we had we had like a number of different ideas that were kind of gestating, and we were thinking about. But then it was when Tom stumbled across like Scandinavian folklore and like looking at all the different monsters and characters there, not really like the gods, but more the kind of the creatures from the lakes and the forest and the cave, that we both got really excited. And we kind of it triggered like a memory from our childhood in both of us. So it was watching the Moomins cartoon. There was a character called the Groke, who was this monster with unblinking eyes that would gradually proceed towards villages or towns or houses and just freeze everything and everybody in their path. But actually, it just wanted a friend. So there was a kind of something in the mix of emotions there where it was scary, but it was sad. And there was some kind of emotional like warmth there to the ending of it. And so there was something in this mix of like creepy, cute, sad, happy, that really can be an, oh, there's something really powerful there. And that and so we, in looking at kind of, you know, meeting folklore monsters, maybe not all that scary, maybe they're suffering with their own problems and maybe you can help. So this, the idea of the kind of the story of Rocky and of Tove started to evolve.
Is there a much of personal stuff in the game as well?
Or I think with any kind of creation, you'll always put a lot of yourself into it, and there's definitely things from our own lives that have resonated and maybe, you know, come out in the game, or experiences from childhood or things that have happened to friends, you know. So yeah, I think it's like with anything, it's always, you know, drawing on your your kind of experience and things that have happened to you or your friends or your family, and drawing some of that stuff in. And I think the human side, the human aspect of Rocky and the family story, we wanted to have I guess just that depth, you know, so it's not about not just about, you know, a fairy tale about monsters. We wanted to have that kind of human emotional depth to the story, but then also to push that human side of it into the creatures and the monsters that we meet. So actually having, okay, well, you know, so they have a humanity as well. So, but yeah, that was something that was really important to us. But obviously it touches on some quite heavy, heavy stuff in the game, but we wanted to make sure that, that kind of, we treated that right. And we kind of,
It's beautifully done. Having characters talking somewhat sounds, it's a great way to perfectly channel the emotions to people and not having to worry that something will get lost in the translation. What I found that the bits of where Tove says, for example, Papa, it bears somewhat way stronger impact on the player, at least for me, at least on me, way more than it would be if everything would be voiced. Was that a design choice from the very beginning, and how did you tackle this question?
So we didn't, like most things, we didn't have the solution like right at the start. I think we knew we needed something, and we did look at like the possibility of fully voicing stuff, but there's so many, we had a number of concerns with that. One was the cost from like a production point of view. Like there was a lot of, I think there was at the end of it being like over 36,000 words in the game. So it would have been it would have basically blown, probably doubled the budget of the game, like to fully voice everything. It would have been that magnitude of cost.
Yeah, I
The
have
other thing
written
is,
a joke about this as well.
but the other thing as well was that we didn't want. And I find sometimes with the fully voiced games, so like you were saying, there's a danger that if you don't get it right, actually it ruins the game. And we weren't that confident in our ability as like voice directors to kind of really get it. Whereas in the system that we have, as you were saying, it allows the player some room to imprint on the game, right? It gives a suggestion, but then the player's brain can fill in the blanks.
Exactly.
But yeah, but it was important. We did experiment with a few things. Like we tried sometimes we were thinking at one point we'd maybe assign a musical instrument to each character and maybe a little musical motif of like when Henrik the father talks, maybe there'd be a little guitar sound, you know. So but then we found that once we did some tests with our Scandinavian friends, some of who actually ended up being in the final game, just to see whether we'd get their Scandinavian accents in and these like emote sounds. So that proved to be really successful, and as soon as we did that, it just elevated all the writing in the game and all the emotion. So yeah, I think it's a cool system, and it's one we're going to be looking at evolving for our next game. Yeah, definitely, it was a really good way of bringing the human touch and emotion. And like you say, when characters are saying people's names, it's quite a powerful thing. So yeah, we're definitely gonna be using that and evolving it moving forward.
It hits really right in the heart, those little words. More about your field of expertise, character and animation. Am I right here?
So I tend to I think when I started out in the industry, it was like 2002, and so my first job at Sony on like PlayStation 2 was character artist and animator. But at that point, whereas AAA now, things are much more specialized. In like 2002, the long distant past, you'd basically make characters, you'd rig the characters, you'd animate the characters, you'd do the cutscenes and all the cinematography. So it was much broader working in kind of AAA development then, whereas now things are much more specialized. So I had that grounding for a while, and actually over my career at Sony, was doing less of that stuff. I was still doing like previous stuff to prove out and concept work before like the main team started. But it was really nice going indie and going back and doing character art and doing animation again. I write all the shaders and do a lot of the UI and stuff, and you know, help out with the writing. So I really enjoy actually my you know over a year, my work is really varied and there's lots of different things I can do. But there's definitely my heart of like I really love creating characters and bringing things to life. I think, yeah, I find that really exciting.
Surely you have this dialed now, but maybe Rocky as game posed some new set of interesting problems to solve due to engine level design. What was that maybe? The thing that you thought more than a day.
So let me try and think. So yeah, I think there's a few things we iterated on, like on the character side of things. I mean, I think part of it was we had this like holistic approach to storytelling where we try and think of, you know, like what are the different tools we can leverage. So I think within for us, a lot of it was about the performance of the characters and the emotional impact of the game. So that was the key thing, and it couldn't really be solved in one area. So where we have like, you know, so I think before we got the audio stuff working for us and like the kind of voice acted emotes, like we were trying to over push the animation side because we were trying to convey all the emotion in the animation, which was very hard. And then once we started getting the vocal emotes in, and then the music as well, we you know, I think it was all about, and then the cinematography, it was all about leveling all those things up. So for us, definitely the from like the storytelling point of view, the biggest thing was, you know, trying to create something with emotional impact and how we would layer up the different disciplines to achieve that. So that was a really big one.
Actually, one of the things that I noticed that I really enjoyed is how, well, tell me if I'm wrong, that levels are themselves, there's only one level, and you just use really good way to switching cameras so it flows well. Not all games can actually have achieved that.
Yeah, so that's the camera stuff's really interesting because we took control of the camera ourselves because we wanted to use it as a storytelling device, and we like this idea of like the camera almost watching the player from the undergrowth. So as like Tuve is running around, it's almost like feels quite predatory, like something is there's like a bit of a threat there, subtle, but so it's something watching you from the bushes and the undergrowth or like behind a corner. So we like that. I mean, and like most of our creative decisions, it comes from another number of places. So that's from like the storytelling point of view. From like a production point of view and like an efficiency, like taking control of the cameras allowed us to, we can control where the player is seeing the scene from. So we don't have to build half the world. The other half, if you look the other way, is there's nothing there. And so for us, there was a in like making sure the game ran well and in making sure that we didn't have too much work to do, it was really important as well to have control over the camera. But I think because we and but yeah, I think we were really pleased with how that system worked out and how it flowed, and we could be as dynamic as we wanted, but also be quite smart about the amount of work that we were creating. Because we wanted to really put a lot of love into what you see on the screen, and actually, if we're quite concise about the world we're creating and what we're showing you, then it allows us to kind of like focus our energies more.
First and last COVID question. The last month before months before the re release last year or half a year, that's when the COVID hit. Did you guys worked all in the office and had to rearrange, or how that all shenanigans played with your time schedules and habits?
So we were actually when we went indie, like we don't have a physical office. We kind of wanted to be working from home in different locations anyway when we started the studio. So when everything happened, it didn't actually change our day-to-day stuff in terms of like us working on the project. It had other impacts, like my wife works as a nurse, and so like she was obviously that was quite a scary time, and what was going to happen, and what was happening with her work. There was lots of reorganization happening in terms of the response, and that was a little bit scary, right? And obviously
Sure.
there's other people on the team had other had partners who were then now working from home. So there's lots of change there. But in terms of things happening around the project, there was lots of change and reaction. But in terms of our work on the actual project itself, like we were working in that way anyway, so. So we kind of carried on with that way, but obviously there was more external like pressures and things to be concerned about around it. But yeah, we were quite lucky. But that's how we've carried on working that way. Now I actually moved from Cambridge up to Dundee about a month ago, just to get a change of scenery and some more room to spread out. And obviously the other team members have remained in where they were. And so yeah, we like that. We like the freedom that from not having a like a physical space. Maybe in the future, there's obviously things we miss about going into a space and having that kind of being able to point at things and like catch up with people over coffee and but then we can do some of that stuff online as well. So I think there's a balance to be met there. But at the moment, we're still enjoying the kind of working as like little satellites. Yeah.
But do you have corporate parties though? I hope. Had one?
No. What do you mean, like a launch party kind of thing, or?
I mean, I called it corporate party for fun of it. You're not a corporation, thank God. But I mean, you have some get-togethers
Oh
over beer or.
yeah. No, totally. I mean, I think now it's like we're more spread out, but we do like when we were all like around Cambridge, we'd have like script days where we'd all meet up and go to a cafe and have script days. And this is obviously before all the COVID stuff. But yeah, that's stuff really important. But also like the people that we collaborate with, so like Sam, who's our narrative designer, and there's people who we've worked with for quite a long time, and so we know each other quite well. But like me and Sam, we'd go hiking together. Like we'd drive up to where she lives in Norfolk, and we'd me and my wife would go up and we'd all like drive around. So yeah, it's important to do stuff and also to celebrate your wins. Yeah, so yeah, it is important. It's nice to be able to do that stuff when we can.
The last release was on Switch, in the last autumn. Yes, am I right here? Or
yeah, and there's been a Super Rare Games are doing a physical Switch version, which is kind of I think it's almost sold out, but that's on sale at the moment. So yeah, Nintendo, it's been really nice. I'm a big Nintendo fan, so it's been really nice that the game went to Switch, and it seems to be it seems to have gone down really well on that platform, so that's nice.
So you had your piece for a while now. So are you doing something new?
Yes. Yeah, so we are. We're basically we can't talk much about it all, but yeah, we're starting on Project Two, and it's basically I think if people liked Rookie, they'll be interested in what we're doing. We're basically, some things will change, but the kind of studio art style, and it's still going to be non-violent storytelling game. So it's important for us that we have a vision for Polygon Treehouse of like what type of games we want to make. Mm-hmm. And so the next game will be, we want to keep all the things that we thought worked really well about Rookie, and look at changing a few things and keep on growing as artists and storytellers. But yeah, we're really excited to show people what we're doing next when the time comes. Still quite early days at the moment, but we're excited.
Awesome. Awesome that you're excited, not awesome that you didn't tell me what are you doing. As I said in the beginning, that congratulations will be later. So now it's time. I would like to wholeheartedly congratulate on your success. I cannot comment on money things, of course, but BAFTA nominee, to be a nominee to an award which was received by Alan Partridge. I know it's Coogan, but well, I would be over the moon. Gazillion of Adventure Gamers Awards and Game Awards and probably something else. I didn't Google it enough. You're a successful studio now. Any advice for indies out there who are making their first game, like me, something we could use?
Sure. Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks. In terms of advice, I think the one thing definitely to do is to play to your strengths. I think it's important to know what your strengths are, and like the game you're making, you should make sure to play to those strengths. Like you can't like look at what other people are doing. You have to do what's right for you and play to your strengths. The other thing is to just try and work as smart as you can. I think there's a really and in looking at creative solutions to things, like a lot of the kind of creative decisions we made on Rookie was looking at things not just from a creative point of view, but also looking at things from a production point of view, and like how can you create a big adventure with a tiny team. And a good example of that is the art style, which has been now like a celebrated strength of the game, whereas actually when we were looking at the art style, we were like, okay, well, how on earth are we going to make a big adventure game with a really tiny team? And so we looked at what happens if we remove texturing and lighting from like 3D art, what does that look like? And so that actually was the starting point for the art style of Rookie, and basically cutting two huge chunks of work out. And it was only by those kind of creative decisions that we were able to make a game. So I think even at a starting point, it's good to be, we like working with creative limitations and go, right, well, here's our creative limitation. We only have like a few people on the team. So what are our options in doing this? And actually in looking at things in terms of creative limitations, you can come up with creative solutions that then become strengths, like the art style. So because like making games, it's difficult to, because there's a really fine line between ambition and really overcommitting yourself and not being able to finish something because it's too much work. So I think being aware of your strengths and looking at kind of creative limitations and what solutions you can like innovative solutions you can bring out of those limitations is a way that we like to work, and I think is maybe a nice thing for other people to consider as well.
No multiplayers, please.
Yeah, no multiplayer.
That's probably it from me. Any shout-outs? What have you played recently, really, that's caught your attention?
So I've been playing lots of stuff. So I tend to play like games early in the morning before I start work. So I just finished Psychonauts 2, which has been amazing. I really Really enjoyed that. I'm trying to think what it's Ace Attorney Chronicles. And I've been playing so Eldest Souls is another game that came out. That was the like a kind of Souls like game that was another game from who like our publishing label. We worked with them and they're great guys and that's a really cool game. So yeah, I tend to play all kinds of genres, everything. So I really enjoy the variety of experiences you can get from indie games and games in general. So and it's nice to have a wide eye. But yeah, Psychonauts 2 definitely is was a real treat. It was really really a real delight to play.
Narratively strong.
Very strong. Yeah, and really just a very nice tone to it. Very considered and lots of really interesting ideas. And that's the kind of thing when you find you're playing something and every session you sit down at, something new surprises you and delights you. You know, it's a good game. So
all those years were worth it.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And hopefully they're having a nice rest now. So
what do you think about Disco Elysium?
So actually, I've been waiting for that to come out on Switch. I don't know if it's out on Switch yet, but actually, I've got a PS5 now, but I didn't have one for a very long time, and so most of the time I was playing my games on Switch. So I was basically waiting for that. I don't tend to play games on PC. So yeah, but it's kind of nice because I know they've got like some like definitive editions. So but yeah, I need to still check it out. But actually now I've got a PS5, I'll probably I can probably pick it up on there.
Please do, please, please do. And say your family goodbye as well then. It's amazing. But yes, I always mention among my inspirations Dark Souls, but especially how Dark Souls tells its story. Those little information crumbs it gives you and creates that vibe. It's amazing. Have you any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so that actually, so I have a really weird fascination with those games, and I think I tried Demon's Souls initially when it came out on PS3 at the time and bounced off it, but have since I got into like Dark Souls at Dark Souls 3 and kind of played the series in a very odd order and worked my way around. But I have such a love for those games and that kind of like almost environmental archaeological storytelling where you're finding little bits of information and piecing together. I think one of the reasons why it's so satisfying as a games player is that you're the kind of archaeologist uncovering this thing. You're the active agent in finding this stuff, and it gives such a sense of history and tangibility to those game worlds that was definitely an inspiration to Rurky and how we like to work as well. And that's the interesting thing about playing games of all different types of genres and pulling that stuff in and actually. You can go and gradually build up, you know, via the interactions you're doing in the world, gradually building up this picture. And things, some things are really old, and some things are newer, and some things are fresh. But I think that's, yeah, definitely something that we looked at for that, and something we'll be kind of. That was. It's really difficult to create a sense of place in a game, and like something that a world that feels lived in, that has age, and convincing the player that, you know, of that. And yeah, that environmental storytelling is really, really nice and quite powerful. You know, you feel that's okay. I'm exploring. Really, really gives you that feeling. You're uncovering. You're peeling back the layers of this world.
Yeah, people really, really tend to focus on the combat thing, that which is great and hard. But it's really. I'm glad to hear sometimes that people actually appreciate the storytelling there because it's fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm really bad at all the combat stuff. Basically, I like it as like I basically just find ways to kind of cheat. Whether it's like, because I'm not really that dexterous with the pad, but I like kind of working out tactically about how I can do it quite easily. But then it's more to like to find out more about the game and the world. So, and I like the fact that it's ambiguous. I think there's a great power with ambiguity in games because, again, like we were talking with the dialogue emotes, the ambiguity allows you to fill in the blanks yourself, or the player to fill in the blanks themselves, which can be, it creates real mystery. It's kind of why in a lot of monster films, like they don't show the monster at the end, because actually what you can't see, your imagination will make a scarier monster than than if they used like special effects. So
and it's cheaper. Great...
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's the creative limitations again, right? So yeah.
Well, man, thank you so much for this amazing half an hour.
My pleasure. It's been really nice. Thanks for inviting me. And yeah, it's really, really cool.
That's it. I hope you liked it. If you did, please consider sharing it. And back Grund on Kickstarter in November. Follow us everywhere. Yada yada. Send me a love letter. You can do that as well. Till the next time. Bye.